shining a light on autism and life as an autistic person. Welcome to My Friend Autism, a podcast breaking down barriers, stigma, and misconceptions around autism while increasing understanding and acceptance of the autistic community. And now, here's your neurodivergent host, Orion Kelly.
Welcome to My Friend Autism. I'm Orion Kelly, that autistic guy. I'm all about providing validation and support for autistic people and their loved ones. So if that's what you're looking for, you've come to the right place. If you're also looking for train wreck style rants, you've also come to the right place. If you're also looking for an autistic guy who seems to offend everyone, you also have come to the right place. I think we're off to a good start. Now, on this podcast, I want to talk about things that I think autistic people, if they could just wave a wand and say, right, this is what the neurotypical person in my life, so, and specifically in this case, the neurotypical partner of mine, would just automatically know. I wave the wand and they know this now, like it's a matter of fact and there's no more issues. What you need to know about your autistic partner. That is what we're doing on this podcast, this audio podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or this video podcast, if you're watching it on my podcast channel on YouTube, Orion Kelly Podcasts. Either way, I appreciate you being here. Now, I think it's important that from the outset, we talk about, oh, hang on, Orion, don't you think autistic people should date autistic people? And my answer to that is, well, no, just the same as I don't think we should have the exact same meal three times a day, every day for the rest of our lives. Like, autistic people are black and white. We're concrete. We're rigid thinkers. Okay, but this is one thing I think it's really important. We are all different. We are all different. You may well date other autistic people. You may well date other neurodivergent people, right? You may well date neurotypical people. And you may well have different experiences than other people you know in your circle of friends. But just because they have an opinion doesn't mean your opinion isn't right. So I'm just saying, don't get bullied or peer pressured by the wider community into who you should date. That's crap, okay? You date who works for you. In my instance, I'm married to a neurotypical woman, okay? That doesn't mean you have to. That doesn't mean the rest of your friends have to do the same. You pick what you want to do. I'm not wasting time. The reason why I'm saying this is because this is kind of like, for those coming up through the dating scene, this might be kind of like the narrative. For example, take some of those TV shows, yeah? Those dating TV shows for autistic people, or more broadly, for neurodivergent people, or more broadly, people of any type of disability. And it seems like, as a rule, they're only able on those shows to date people who also have one form of disability or another. All people who are autistic or neurodivergent, which are disabilities, obviously, medically diagnosed. Now, that show would tell you that, well, that's right, autistic people should date autistic people. That makes sense. Why wouldn't that make sense? But see, that goes against the whole idea of humanity, which is about diversity, right? Nothing thrives, nothing evolves without diversity. So the idea that this is what the narrative is, as you grow up, you may fall into that trap. So I'm just saying, hey, it's your life, mate. Date who you want to date. Work out what works for you and do your best. In this instance, this might not work as well if you have another autistic partner. But if you have a neurodivergent partner, so you're autistic and your partner might not be, but maybe has, I don't know, what could you say, ADHD or Tourette's or all other types. Okay, this will be helpful. And if you have a partner, and even a friend or a family member, it works too, who's neurotypical. This podcast is for them. But hopefully for you too, because it'll provide you with some sort of validation, like, yep, that's me, I feel heard. So let's do that. I want to give you the tips and the key things I think you need to know to navigate neurodiverse relationships. So we'll start off with alone time. Now, again, the magic wand, your partner just knows this. Okay, the importance of alone time for your autistic partner. Now, this is critical. Regular alone time is critical, like oxygen for autistic people. Why, Orion? Okay, well, you need oxygen to live, yeah, to sustain life. Autistic people need regular alone time to sustain life through regulating themselves, through recovering from the daily challenges of the social interactions, sensory overload, whatever else, the endless bombardment of things thrown at you by the neurotypical world that can put you off track. We need alone time. It's critical. And you might go, well, so do we, right? Yeah, okay, cool. If you're neurotypical, yeah, you need me time, alone time too. I get that. Everyone needs alone time. Yeah, fair enough. What I'm saying is, though, it's important to understand the actual importance of it. So for autistic people, it's of critical importance. But in saying that, that also helps the health of your relationship. So our capacity to meet the demands of everyday life are not always going to be enough. They're not always going to be able to meet the demands and stresses of life, right? Now, what that means is our capacity as autistic people from the demands of everyday life can be exhausted daily. And it doesn't mean at the end of the day. They could be exhausted in the morning, right? And so you don't know. Now, to try and find that capacity again to go again later on in the day, alone time is one of the tools we use. Alone time isn't an optional extra. It isn't an add-on at an additional price. This is a 100% critical requirement for autistic people. In fact, it's a non-negotiable. It's a non-negotiable daily coping strategy that autistic people use to prevent all sorts of bad stuff. So dysregulation, meltdowns, shutdowns, burnout, autistic rage, outbursts, the kind of things that tear us down, but they don't come out of nowhere. They manifest because we haven't been able to regulate ourselves when we felt dysregulated, right? So alone time provides that. So you might go, well, alone time's annoying. Yeah, but what's more annoying? Meltdowns, shutdowns, burnout, dysregulation, autistic rage, outbursts, whatever. Are they more annoying? I would think they are. So in my opinion, and again, this is just my opinion. In my opinion, the importance of alone time cannot be underestimated. It is invaluable, and it's a win-win for both parties. Okay, what's another thing I think you guys should know about your autistic partner? Let's talk about special interests. Now, from the get-go, this has many names. You might just say it's a special interest because that's what you've always said. You might call it your passion. You might even call it an intense passion. Bottom line is autistic people thrive on our passions, our interests, but not just on them, spending time on our passions and interests. In fact, it really is the lifeblood of an autistic person. Alone time might be oxygen. This is the blood, my friend. This is what it's all about. Our entire day, in my opinion, revolves around people getting in the way of us doing our passions and special interests. And why is that? Well, we do things we love or we're deeply interested in. So we're transported into this world of passion and excitement and fulfillment. Special interests for autistic people are not what you might class as hobbies, as casual time passes, right? We don't do these things to pass time or for hobbies or whatever. I'm not even entirely sure the point of that. We do them because this is what we want to do. Now, the thing about this is, and people are going to say, well, you know, hey, you can't, you know, I've got an autistic kid. He can't live his life just doing his special interest. Now, to that I say, in fact, you've missed the point. One of the key ways to encourage autistic kids or autistic adults for that matter to learn new skills, to learn really anything from experiences, to better themselves, to grow themselves, is through the vehicle of their passions or special interests. So we're using the things we know they're passionate about as a way, as a means of providing information or education or lessons. And you might think that sounds a bit complicated. It's not real. I mean, you're talking about an autistic kid and their emotions, and they love weather or planets or Pokemon characters or Minecraft or whatever it is. Yeah, you can use that to describe how you're feeling. Because, you know, there's going to be weather that's calm and peaceful and weather that's a bit violent. Same with characters. Same with planets. So we're using what we know they love to help them become better people, right? So for us, special interest passions are really what our life is about. That's really all our life is about. We don't do it to pass time. In my opinion, as an autistic person, the best way to pass time is to sleep. That's what sleep's for. That's what sleep's for. The life's getting a bit tough today. Jeez, I wish it was dinner. Maybe just move on. I know what I'll do. I'll have a sleep. So the bottom line is, and let's get serious again. Special interests provide like a sense of belonging, a sense of peace. And why is that important? Because autistic people can feel like we are aliens on this planet Earth, like we're not from here, like our brains don't provide us with all the stuff that you guys, neurotypical people, seemingly just have that makes life easy or makes life understandable, that makes sense. We don't seem to have that. Our brain is different. So we're using it as a positive, embracing our need for these passions, these interests, without the constant judgment or the guilt trips. Now, guilt trips for adults or partners is a big thing. You might guilt trip or judge your autistic partner because of their need or the time they want to consume on their passions or special interests. But at what cost? Do you want to weaken the relationship or strengthen the relationship? Right? Do you want to deepen the connection or break the connection? And by the way, people always argue, oh, Orion, autistic partners just want to spend on the whole life, the whole day, just doing stuff that they like or their own interests or passions. What you forget in that argument is, yes, but that means then you in that moment potentially have time to engage in your passions. People forget this win-win situation. You're complaining, but then you can do me time then as well. Like you can use that as well. So, and I get that doesn't always work, but sometimes we completely forget the win-win in these situations. So these, in my opinion, are the things that I think you need to know about your autistic partner, or even more generally, you need to know about the autistic person in your life. The next one I want to talk about is our honesty and our logical way of thinking. Now, this is tricky with relationships, but I reckon, from my experience in general terms, neurotypical people who are in a relationship with an autistic person actually found it quite attractive, quite alluring, quite refreshing, right? That their autistic partner is so open and honest. Maybe it was early in dating, the relationship, whatever. That kind of openness and honesty and rawness and vulnerability was attractive to you. That's what got you, potentially. You may well have fallen in love with the autistic person because of that, because of how different, how refreshing their way of interacting with you and others is compared to your past partners. So you may have dated other neurotypical people and found them to be completely unreadable, a closed book, wall upon wall upon wall, never honest, never open, fake. You can't tell which is which. Right? They're your past partners. Then you date an autistic person and they just do their thing. They're just them, right? And that's refreshing. Now, the issue is at some point, I bet you've also quickly discovered how much you may have missed or at least relied on having that neurotypical partner who could actually not be so bloody honest all the time, who could actually have the ability to lie to you, to sugarcoat things. I always find this just bizarre, by the way. I find this bizarre. It's this idea that people always say honesty is the best policy, but then they say you shouldn't have told the truth just then. That offended me or hurt me. What do you mean? So you're saying honesty is the best policy, but I should lie to you? That's not the policy. And you made, I didn't make the policy. You made the policy, mate. You want to rewrite it? Go ahead and rewrite it. What's this sugarcoating crap mean? What are you talking about sugarcoating? What am I coating my words now? What does that mean? Oh, it just means softening the word. Okay, so if the truth is offensive, it's always going to be offensive to you, regardless if it's softened. In end, sugarcoating really means lying, I reckon, and white lies. What, we're colouring lies now? What's the difference? A lie is a lie, right? And you're saying, no, but sometimes it's good to lie. Okay, fine. If that's the premise, then that's the policy. Honesty is sometimes the best policy, but most of the time, lying is better. Let's make that the new policy in life. Fair enough? What do you reckon? Honesty, sometimes the best policy, but for the most part, lying is best. Because, you know, autistic people, we've got a brain that views and experiences the world differently through our autistic brain, right? It's more of a right or wrong, black or white lens. We see the truth. We see the truth. That's that. Communicating openly and honestly is our standard operating procedure. We observe something. We see the factual reality of it. That, in effect, is the truth. We convey that as part of just this is how our brain works. That is our operating system. Our brain is different. Right? I think it's important, though, you don't judge your autistic partner. Like, why are you always trying to offend me? Why are you always criticizing me? Like, what is this? And the problem with that is, and I can't speak for everyone, but in general terms, autistic people, In no way have that intention. So neurodivergent people, autistic people, see the world differently and don't see the issue the way you see it with regards to just being open and honest. Neurotypical people, in my opinion, have a much more flexible view of the need for truth, openness and honesty. It's nuanced, which isn't a bad thing. And yes, in a way, I'm basically saying your autistic brain isn't as nuanced in social communication and interaction. Oh, really? Oh, why is that? It's on the diagnostic criteria. So you can be flexible with the truth. Good for you, mate. But our brain doesn't look at it like that. There's the truth and there's the lie. Doesn't mean autistic people can't lie, by the way. That's a crap myth. What a load of rubbish that is. Why do autistic people lie? If they do, why have they got to that point? I don't know from a scientific point of view, but from my own experiences and observations, I reckon for the most part, an autistic person lies to fit in with a group of people they don't even know. So you go, well, why wouldn't you do it with your partner? No. We love and know our partner and are comfortable to be ourselves. But when we're masking or trying to fit in with a new group of people, could be school, could be work, whatever, lying is good. Lying will impress them or make them feel like we're, and by the way, how's that different to, you know, to white lying or sugarcoating? It's not. So we do it, but I think the intention is more based on trying to, our mind seeing how we can fit in. But again, that's just a personal opinion. I guess the point is it isn't our intention to hurt or criticize or offend. I say this a few times and I'll keep saying it. For an autistic person, in my opinion, being honest is our way of being kind, of showing love and affection. Honestly, our way of showing love to you, our potentially neurotypical partner, is through our openness and honesty. You look at it like offensive, criticizing, showing you don't like us. We look at it like I'm telling you the truth and being real with you because I love you and this is my way of being kind to you. If I lie to you, my mind will say, well, that would be very mean because you'll go on deluded. But apparently neurotypical people would prefer to live a life of delusion than a life of reality. Now, I don't understand what that is, but I think that's pretty much true. If you're a neurotypical person, in my opinion, and for the most part, If you had a choice, you would choose a life of delusion. You would rather be deluded that you think that what you think the truth is the real truth. And that's this whole idea of like my truth. There's no my truth. There's no my truth. There's the truth, right? And there's not the truth. Oh, but this is my truth. No, no. You can have a perception of what you think the truth is, but this is a problem with people. They don't realize it. No one is themselves. You're not even yourself. You're not even who you think I think you are. It's not even that. It's even more complicated than that. Like you are who I think you are, who you think I am and you are. I've lost it. Let's work this through. I am who you think I am through. Okay. And then there was a priest and they went into a bar and there was a nun and they said, no, okay, I've lost it. Shut up. No, you're doing the podcast. No, stop. Stop what you're doing. You finished the podcast, mate. You got a problem? No, we're good. Fantastic. Don't start me. I'm telling you. No. That look is not going to help me. You wipe that look off your face. This isn't a joke to me. I'm working here. I'm working here, mate. Do you want the podcast or not? Then you know, tell your face, mate. All right, next one. I think you need to know is about emotional intimacy. Your autistic partner may not be able to identify, process, and convey their feelings in a way that you've grown to expect. Okay. Now, why is that? Well, they're autistic, mate. Good grief. For starters, before we get into the real stuff, for starters, I'm so sick of neurotypical people knowing they're dating or know an autistic person, yet continuing, even after knowing that, continuing each day with the premise that the expectations I will place on you are neurotypical expectations. I reckon this is the most frustrating thing for any autistic person, and not with strangers, with their loved ones. I reckon one of the most frustrating things for autistic people right now is the people that actually know them and know they're autistic still continually, whether it's conscious or subconscious, waking up every day and placing neurotypical expectations upon them. Grow up, wake up. Hello, hello. Are you there? Knock, knock. Come in. Who's that? It's waking up to normal, real autistic expectations. For goodness sakes. All right, so emotional intimacy. Let's talk about a thing called alexithymia. This is something that is very common amongst neurodivergent people. So not just autistic people. It doesn't mean, though, alexithymia. What it doesn't mean is we don't experience emotions. It doesn't mean we don't feel emotions. People hear alexithymia and think, oh, yeah, that's a thing where you just don't feel anything, right? No. Alexithymia is, in effect, a significant challenge in identifying, in processing, in conveying our emotions and feelings. So we feel them. We experience them. Have you ever had an autistic partner who just was not able to explain to you why their body is going weird or they're interacting or they've just lost it? Right? They don't know what they're feeling. They can't convey to you because they can't even identify what they're feeling. Sometimes, if you're at the doctor's or like I might go to the physio or whatever, and they'll go like, what muscle is hurting or what part is hurting? And I say, I don't know. Or there'll be 30 seconds of dead air, right? Ryan, what are you feeling? What can you feel at the moment? 30 seconds of dead air followed by, I don't know, nothing. I don't know. Right? It's legitimate. It's a challenge for autistic people. Now, this challenge for your autistic partner in identifying, processing, conveying emotions and feelings clearly is going to cause problems. So it's going to lead to probably you, the neurotypical partner, feeling like your relationship therefore lacks emotional intimacy. If your partner can't identify or convey or process your feelings, their feelings, share feelings, it's like, well, then there is no emotional intimacy. All I can say is autistic people are not being cold. We're not being uncaring. We're not being closed up. We're experiencing life through a different brain. Now, I'm not just saying accept it. I'm saying understand it and help us along the way. So, okay, it looks, Ryan, it looks like something's going on at the moment. the way you're moving or talking or acting. It looks like something's going on at the moment. Are you feeling okay? What's happening? All right, have a conversation. Is it a good feeling? Is it a bad feeling? What do you think it feels like, if you could have a guess? Like, these are the kind of things you can do. Emotional intimacy isn't an issue if you're prepared to be open about it and helpful and enable, and also understand that, again, this is one of the classic examples of expectation. Neurotypical expectations on an autistic person who has genuine struggles identifying. So we are experiencing the emotions. We are feeling the emotions. We just can't identify them, place them, convey them properly. When I mean properly, I mean in neurotypical expectations. All right, here's another one. Let's talk about love language. So your autistic partner may well have a very different love language to you. I reckon that's probably a given. You've got to find your love language, guys. There's a combined love language in a neurodiverse relationship. Now, this is obviously very challenging, but it's critical. If you want to have a healthy relationship, clearly you both have love languages, but you have to find a combined love language. Without that, there is no relationship. Okay, this is two people being unfulfilled. Now, it's actually been suggested that some brain scans of autistic people have revealed that when we express feeling love or affection for someone, different areas of our autistic brain are activated compared to neurotypical people. Does that make sense? When we say, I'm feeling really loved, or I'm feeling real love and affection for you, different parts of our autistic brain are activated compared to a neurotypical brain. Now, different parts already. Okay. And then you add to that, we've got a challenge of conveying our feelings and emotions due to alexithymia we just talked about, in a neurotypical way, that is. Then you've got your intimacy. That didn't sound right. Then you've autistic people talk fast sometimes. The best thing, like I do to my son, to say is, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Could you try saying it again just a little bit slower? Okay, that's what I do. And the intimacy and connection breaks down, right? So, okay, try embracing the differences through understanding each other more. Your love language might be similar or close or far away, but you will find a combined love language. It's a hard thing to give examples to, but there'll be something that in a relationship you guys both feel like you really connect deeply when that's happening. It could be a physical thing, an emotional thing, a mental thing. But there is, you will find that something's like, this is when I feel most connected to you. That could be that your combined love language. All right, let's talk about sensory challenges. So things you need to know about your autistic partner. Your autistic partner has significant sensory sensitivities. It's part of a diagnostic criteria. And everyone goes, oh, that just means what, they freak out? No, this is a thing. It's more nuanced than that. There's hyper and hypo. There's an over-experience of the senses and an under-experience of the senses. And it doesn't mean you have one or the other. You can have both in different things. For example, pain might not be something you experience to the same level. You might under-experience pain, but then you might be over-experience smells, sounds, light. So it's really important to get to know your autistic partner's specific sensory triggers. This is the key. So we have them, know that. Now work out what they are. So that can be as simple as just living and breathing. The same sound always triggers. Or it seems like Orion's always going, what's that smell? Okay, Orion must have a real smell trigger, right? So we can fix that. You limit these issues. You keep things clean. You have windows open when cooking. All different things. More importantly, though, you really need to know how each sensory trigger can actually affect your autistic partner and what to expect. Why is that? Because every sensory trigger takes a toll, makes an impact, and compounds over time into things like autistic burnout. But of course, each trigger, each toll, each impact is different. So a light trigger, I put glasses on. Not so bad. Sunglasses, yeah. Not so bad. Not really triggered. Just annoyed, really. Just a bit annoyed. put the sunnies on. I'm perfectly great. Sounds going off that I can't stop or can't work out where they are, I will get progressively more agitated. It will escalate. It could go into a meltdown. Right? Smells. What's that smell? If I can automatically fix it or work it out, nothing. If it's going to be lasting for a period of time because I simply can't find it, right? That happens sometimes. That is going to lead to a much bigger reaction. So that's why it's really important to understand that all the different triggers and all the manifestations. And because you know, Orion, just put on your sunglasses. Here's your sunglasses. That'll fix it, right? Or that's no worries. We'll open a window. Or I know what that noise is. It's just this alarm. I'll turn it off. You know, these kind of things are really important. So I guess the best thing to say is your autistic partner may not be able at times to like give the attention that you need. But in those moments, it probably has nothing to do with you. It may actually be because unbeknownst to you, unaware to you, they're actually at the moment navigating or being triggered by something sensory. Does that make sense? Maybe they feel distant or they've missed a whole conversation or they're becoming agitated. Not because they're not trying to show you love and affection or attention. No, it's because right now they're being triggered by something sensory. Is that something you can become aware of? That's another thing to know. Let's talk about change. And I don't mean those things we used to have back in the olden days, kids, back when people had real money. That's right. We used to carry around wallets and there was money in there. Like, and change is these like little circular, like metal-y things. They're called coins. That's right. And you'd take the coins out and you'd have to count them. Back in my day, we had to know how to count by ourselves. What? What, Dad? Seriously. Back in my day, I had to know how to count numbers and money before I could give it to someone. I'd count it and I'd give it to them. What do you mean? You don't just give them the card and they swipe it? No. Couldn't you just give them money and then they just give back what they don't need to take? No, I guess kind of. That's right, coins, change, not that change. Not talking about that change. I'm talking about the change autistic people find hard, which is change. That came out wrong. Not coin change, okay? You know, let's just forget about it. If I say change one more time, I just did it. Okay, I don't know what it means anymore. Difficulty with change. Autistic people can find it really challenging dealing with change. Now, again, I'm not talking about coins. Shut up. Even minor change. So, you know, like you know, your 5 cent, your 10 cent. Again with the change. Difficulty with change. Even minor changes to plans and routine. Now, your autistic partner may have been much better at this, like masking this, navigating this early in your relationship. But see, as time goes by in relationships, demands tend to increase. So what happens? Well, you'll notice our capacity to deal with these changes decreases. The best way I can put this, and everyone's different, you know, when you're dating someone, as a rule, you're not married, you don't have kids, you don't have mortgages and you know, debts and stresses, daily life, right? So things are fun and it's on your terms. Your capacity is right up there. Things change from time to time. It's like, whatever, man, you know, it doesn't really affect you because you have the capacity to deal with it. You get married, you have kids, maybe you get a house, you got jobs, you got bills and pressures and life and stresses and all these other things that people rely on you for. Yeah. The slightest little change, massive issue. This is a big, you need to know this about your autistic partner. This isn't a tantrum. As autistic people, again, we rely on sameness, routine, rigidity, plans. These things keep us regulated in a world designed to dysregulate us. Okay, so understanding that reliance, understanding the reliance your autistic partner has on routines, plans, sameness, and understanding it isn't about control. It's simply our way of regulating ourselves in an alien world. Now, just a quick side note to this. Clearly, there are some people who thrive on control for abusive reasons. Okay? I'm not talking about them. I'm saying, in general terms, if you are dating or know an autistic person, They're your friend, family, partner, whatever. And this autistic person thrives on control, and you think this could potentially be a bad thing. The first thing is, okay, well, it's up to you, obviously, to work out what you feel it is, right? So we're putting aside if it's someone who's doing this for an abusive reason, which is completely unacceptable. My thought here is autistic people are naturally anxious people. We're naturally living in a world that doesn't seem right for us. It's like we're constantly the fish out of water. So everything we do seems awkward and weird and odd and hard and anxious. And in my opinion, the key to managing anxiety is to control the controllables. So if you have an autistic kid or an autistic partner who seems to want to control every little thing, like they're the director of the world, first look at it like it's probably based on pure anxiety. Don't shame an autistic kid for wanting to control every little thing. It's probably because the world they live in is so hard and they're so anxious about it that this is their way of controlling the controllables, of maintaining some sort of peace. If you look at it like that, that will definitely help. Okay. Couple more things you need to know about your autistic partner. Social interactions. Here we go. So what do you do when you have a partner? You go places, gatherings, interactions, a lot of new people. Could be workmates, could be friends. It's really challenging for your autistic partner. From my point of view, it's bloody horrible. Now, they may push back. They may just flat out refuse. I'm not going to that thing. I don't want to go to that thing with your family. I don't want to go to that work thing. I don't even want to go to that dinner with your friends and your family or whatever, right? Now, that's not a good feeling for a neurotypical person. You're going to take that personally. You're going to feel offended. You're going to feel hurt, right? But not just you. Your friends, your family, your workmates, they may feel offended or hurt by your no-show as the autistic person. What happens to you, the autistic person, then you doing it purely because you're trying to keep yourself regulated and far away from meltdowns and burnouts and all those types of things. You're just protecting yourself, basically. You start to feel even more isolated from the world. And you're also starving yourself of social interactions. You've really got to, autistic people have to look at the idea that we are still social beings, we just have challenges in them. So it's still important to try and fill that cup up. Your autistic partner's intention isn't, in my opinion, to reject or to offend your family, your friends, yourself, your workmates. Our issue is we simply need our social interactions to be more autistic friendly, right? Okay, what does that mean? Okay, spaced out over time. Not three parties in one week, right? Spaced out over time. This is especially hard when you have those holiday periods. And also with less people involved. If it's going to be like 100 people, well, it's probably not going to make a lot of sense to even put your autistic partner through that, right? So you have to look at it from both sides. Communication and interaction are a core part of being autistic. Just like sensory sensitivities. We've talked about those. And don't forget, they can be triggered by the environment of social interactions. So now we've got two things. We've got the issue of going to these social interactions as autistic people, but then we have to, and not they've got all that challenge, but then on top of that, there's all the sensory stuff that you well know happens in these types of situations. So that's something that's really important to understand, from my opinion. Another one you need to know is we've got a different brain. We've got a different view. I still say this like it's new. Autistic people are only autistic because they have a autistic brain, a differently wired brain, a different brain. Right? That's it. Now, without your brain, you're dead. I mean, there can't be much more that identifies or, you know, is you than your brain. You can't separate a brain from a person. You do that, they're dead. So it's a pretty big part. Being autistic means we've got a different brain, okay? An autistic brain, neurodivergent brain, whatever way you want to say it. So look at it like this. It's impossible for us to view and experience the world the same as a neurotypical brain does. How? Because we don't have one, guys. This is like still breaking news. But seriously, we have significant challenges in identifying, processing, and expressing our feelings and emotions and those of others. You know, when your autistic partner misses your verbal or nonverbal cues, they're not trying to be cold. They didn't receive them in the first place, guys, because it was sent to a brain that's different, that's not designed to pick up on them. We may even struggle to understand and accept your perspective after, and this happens with my wife a lot, you, in your mind, have clearly explained it to us. There's no bad intentions on our part, right? We simply have a difficulty viewing things from your perspective because they're being viewed and processed through our perspective and our autistic brain. By the way, if you get agitated, right, because I don't understand, or the autistic partner in your life doesn't understand and accept your perspective after you have, in your mind, your neurotypical mind, clearly explained it, that's not our fault. That's your fault. If you're trying to provide information to someone, in my opinion, you keep providing that information until that someone understands the information. And we're talking about two completely different brains here. Different brain, different view. For goodness sakes, I'm so sick of saying this like it's breaking news. Seriously, guys. Okay. You need to know about your autistic partner and masking. This is still a widely judged trait. Your autistic partner has been suppressing their true autistic self for a lifetime. So from as early as they can remember, whether it's daycare or kindergarten or whatever, they have been doing whatever they can do to fit in and survive day-by-day life on a neurotypical planet. And everyone does that. Okay, fair enough, but what I'm saying is the autistic kid has gone to daycare or kinder or school and has been told on a daily basis by people, you're not right. You're wrong. You're broken. You're weird. You know, you're dumb or stupid, or we don't want to be around you, right? Like you're a circus act. So then from a very early age, that autistic kid realizes, this is the feedback I've been given. I've got to stop being me. I've got to try and pretend to be them, which is masking. Now, this comes at a cost, a massive cost. Masking is exhausting. You have no self-esteem. You riddle with anxiety and depression, a complete burnout. We struggle to actually know who we really are. Who are we? Well, I've spent my whole life masking. I don't even know who I am. And this identity crisis is obviously going to impact both parties in the relationship. If you are constantly masking, your autistic partner is going to become more irritable. So if your autistic partner is constantly masking, they're going to be irritable. They're going to be sensitive. They're going to be tired, agitated. They're going to need more alone time. Why are they masking around you? You're their partner or their loved one. Why? Well, number one, they might not be doing it purposely, right? It's just always been this way. Number two, you might actually still judge them and give them bad feedback when they are too autistic. Meltdown, shutdown, burnout, dysregulation. You might still judge and belittle that, even though you're their partner or their loved one. What are you doing? So that's why. They can't even really do it at home. Every time I do it, you go, oh man, this is too much. You've got to provide your autistic partner with an accepting, safe environment. So they can be themselves. Maybe they have to find themselves, but at least they can be themselves. And that is a win-win for both you and them.
My Friend Autism with Orion Kelly. Catch up on all the episodes at orionkelly.com.au.
I really appreciate you being a part of this community. It's great to have you. If you've been listening to my podcast, thank you. Have you checked out the podcast YouTube channel? So it's my YouTube channel, Orion Kelly Podcast, with nothing but video podcasts. Go and check it out. Don't forget my primary channel, Orion Kelly, That Autistic Guy. You know, until this next podcast, can I just say, I think you're my favorite. Just leave it at that.
You've been listening to My Friend Autism with Orion Kelly. To join the conversation, get in touch with Orion, and binge all the podcasts, blogs, and videos, visit orionkelly.com.au.